Welcome back to another special edition of Crash. Are you ready? We have today, back by popular demand, Eustace Mullins. Eustace Mullins wrote a whole series of books on the money system and also about the medical system. And, of course, we were talking in our last interview about the secrets of the Federal Reserve. I reviewed that book again last evening, and it is absolutely superb. It is so head and shoulders above the combination of information and disinformation, which is so prevalent among so many of these so-called patriotic books out there. I might add parenthetically, one of the most popular books on the Federal Reserve probably is Creature from Jekyll Island, and it was curious to me when I read the book several years ago that in one of the summary chapters, I don't have the book in front of me right now, but anyway, if you look in the one of the summary chapters, the author Griffin is talking there about the situation in colonial America, and he talks about how the that terrible fiat colonial currency was ruinous for America, and then he says that it was the Bank of England which restored stability to the colony. So it struck me as rather curious that in that particular summary chapter, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, of course, the Bank of England is no more English than the Federal Reserve Bank is federal. It struck me as rather curious that the author of the probably what is the most popular book on the Federal Reserve, The Creature from Jekyll Island, seemed to be praising the very international bankers that the whole book was supposed to be against, because he was lauding the efforts of the Bank of England to quote-unquote restore stability to the colonies. But what he never mentioned was that so-called terrible colonial currency was a debt-free currency, and it enabled the colonies to become the most prosperous area on the face of the earth. The issue of debt money versus debt-free money was not addressed in that summary chapter. Indeed, it was the Bank of England that tried to ruin the circulating medium of the colonies, because the debt-free, non-parasitic money system of the colonies was a challenge to the parasitic debt money system of the international bankers. Well, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, Eustace Mullins' book explains perfectly the difference between a parasitic debt money system and a debt-free sovereign currency. Welcome back again by popular demand. Eustace, are you there?
Of a new book.
Well, tell us about your new book. Now, you mentioned just before we went on the air that you had already written a book years ago, and you personally met the poet Ezra Pound. The title of the older book is called This Difficult Individual, Ezra Pound. Now, Ezra Pound, for the listeners that are not already familiar with Ezra Pound was a brilliant poet, probably the most towering literary figure of his era. He, of course, was a contemporary of Ernest Hemingway, and yet it's interesting because the circles of writers and poets, they all look to Ezra Pound as the number one poet of the era. Those who were contemporaries all looked to Ezra Pound for inspiration, and yet today, although Ezra Pound is certainly known, Ernest Hemingway is much better known, probably by the average reader, than Ezra Pound is. Yet, to his contemporaries, Ezra Pound was the author that they drew inspiration from. One of the reasons could possibly be that Ezra Pound found out too much about the money system. He understood the difference between parasitic debt money and debt-free sovereign currency. And Eustace Mullins, is one of the few remaining individuals alive today that actually met and worked with Ezra Pound. So, Eustace, could you tell us about your new book about Ezra Pound?
Oh, yes. It's directly attributable to Ezra Pound. Anyway, as I'm the only living protege of Ezra Pound at the present time. All of his Nobel Prize winners that his proteges got the Nobel Prize for Literature have passed on. Ernest Hemingway, his most famous protege, became an outright communist and became the darling of Hollywood. And so he made quite a bit of money, but he became an alcoholic and died very soon. He died of suicide, as a matter of fact, so that should be a warning to you. And Ezra Pound never resented him. He called Hemingway him. He never resented the fact that he became a communist. He never complained about it because he realized every man has to follow his own goal.
Well, now, in your studies with Ezra Pound, what are the things that he mentioned about the most important things that he mentioned to you about the money system in terms of what would work and what would not work?
Oh, well, he was perfectly familiar with it all. And the first thing he told me, he said, you have to learn the difference between interest-bearing currency and non-interest-bearing currency. And, of course, that was Greek to me, but I finally learned it.
Okay, what exactly is the difference between interest-bearing currency and non-interest-bearing currency?
Well, it's a religious situation. Interest-bearing currency is the old Babylonian system. It comes straight from Babylon. And, you know, the American army has been tied up in Iraq, the first Christian nation, and is now preparing to nuke Iran, which is the second Christian nation. These are Caucasian people, the origins of our civilization. And we plan to wipe off the first face of the earth. Of course, genocide is illegal under the United Nations, but it can be forgivable if it's for a worthy cause, like wiping out a religious group.
Well, there is an article posted on my website about how the Christians in Iraq are fleeing because under Saddam, they Hussein, they said they were tolerated because that was a secular state. But now that the Iraqi situation is fragmenting, you have religious factions persecuting the Christians in Iraq. Back after the break. Welcome back to Crash. Are you ready? We're back with our distinguished guest, Eustace Mullins. Eustace, I remember in reading Ezra Pound's works that Ezra did distinguish. He said not all interest is usury. In other words, an individual who gets a reasonable return on something he has produced, Ezra would call that interest. On the other hand, someone like an international banker who gets a return on something he has not produced, he would call that type of interest usury.
Oh, yes. Ezra was a very practical person, and he was not a dreamer, but he saw what was before him. He's very much like another great American, Charles Lindbergh, of course, who, like Ezra, opposed the entry of United States into World War II to save communism.
Well, now, he said in his writings, he stressed the importance of the local economy. Now, of course, we've had Paul Glover interviewed on our program, who was the founder of Ithaca Hours. It's interesting because Ithaca Hours is a local currency. It's been in existence since the early 1990s, and it works. And this this type of local currency is a debt-free, non-parasitic local currency. It was looked at by the IRS. It was looked at by the Federal Reserve Bank, and what they said was there is no law that prevents the issuance of Ithaca hours. And so it has been working for years, and indeed this was exactly in the Depression how the cities survived. They issued different types of Depression script. Now, one of the types of Depression script that I ran across years ago was from Mason City, Iowa, and it was very interesting because they were using a type of you had many different types of money or currency circulating during the crisis of the Depression. Of course, the Depression was engineered by the international bankers by artificially creating debt and then contracting the currency. That's the boom and bust cycle. So the cities that survived by issuing their own local currency. And one of the types of local currency it's the only time I've ever seen it, because the surviving examples are rare today, was issued in Mason City, Iowa. And this was a type of currency that was inspired by the works of Silvio Gesell. And what it was, on the back of the currency, you would have stamps that would have to be affixed for you to spend that currency. And if you didn't spend that currency within a certain length of time, you'd have to buy another stamp. So there was an incentive to keep the money circulating. On the back of that currency, every single stamp, stock or stamp, was filled, which shows me that currency circulated. In other words, it did what it was intended to do, because every place there was for a stamp was filled. Two of the individuals that Ezra Pound was very fond of, one was, of course, Sylvia Gesell, and the other was C.H. Douglas, whose theory of social credit was, again, a non-parasitic theory of the money system. What did Ezra Pound mention to you about these two individuals, specifically Sylvia Gesell and then also C.H. Douglas?
Oh, he talked about C.H. Douglas and social credit constantly. One of the first things he said to me was local credit, local control of local credit. That was one of his maxims. And that was his whole life. He had devoted it to that.
So he understood perfectly, Ezra Pound understood perfectly, the difference between a non-parasitic, debt-free, local-based currency and a parasitic international debt money system.
Well, he also understood that all wars are wars to destroy the white race. Of course, it's illegal to mention the white race, because if you do, you're called a Nazi. But the fact is that the white race has the right to survive like any race. And
when we were talking about the money system, Eustace, what did Ezra Pound recommend as an antidote to the parasitic money system of the international bankers?
It goes back to Babylonian debt money 5,000 years ago. This isn't anything new, and people don't understand that it's just an artificial system forced on the world 5,000 years ago. And they've accepted it and said that to them that is money, and it's not money at all. It's a creation of parasitic bankers. And all wars have been fought to uphold the Babylonian money system. That was why Hitler and Mussolini were attacked by the United States, because they refused to join in the central bank system of Europe. Germany and Italy declined participation in the central bank system of the parasitic bankers. That's all World War One and World War Two are about. There's nothing else about it.
Well, in your
Woodrow Wilson said all wars are economic in origin, because he that meant that they were wars of economic goals.
Well, now, in your book, you document how the international bankers pushed and prodded us into World War One, and they provided the, of course, this is typical, they provide the financing for their wars to both sides that they intend to have fight each other. Could you tell us a little bit about how the international bankers maneuvered and facilitated World War One?
Well, they set up central banks in the early 1900s, all over Europe and all over the world. And these central banks see the first duty of a central bank is to provide war finance. So by setting up central banks, they initiated the era of wars, because the central banks were set up slowly, solely to finance world wars. And all these wars were wars against the white race, because the
you mentioned in your book that the international bankers had facilitated. We'll go back to this topic after the break. We're back with our distinguished guest, Eustace Mullins. Eustace, I would disagree with the idea that the machinations of the international bankers are targeted at any one specific race. I believe there are articles posted on my website about how the international bankers have absolutely raped Haiti, which, of course, is ethnically and racially is predominantly black. They have impoverished Haiti through their manipulations of the international money system. I believe that the international bankers want to make everybody into debt slaves. They want all of us to be debt slaves on the global plantation. They have already put in a large trading economic trading bloc in the form of the European Union, with the currency being the euro. The next step that they have planned for us in the debt slavery sequence is the establishment of the North American Union, in which they're attempting to dissolve the borders between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Of course, they realize that they're not going to get their one-world debt slavery system in one step, so as an interim step, they have to consolidate large blocks of economic debt slavery in the form of, now they've got the European Union, now they want to get the Amero going, with the currency's already been, the Amero has already been printed up. They want to get the North American Union going. These are large blocks which will be ultimately be fused into, at least that's their plan, fused into one block, but they can't do it all at once. So as an interim step, they're forming the European Union, they're forming the North American Union. How close, in your opinion, are they to making a reality of the North American Union?
Well, they're kind of closer. They work on it all the time. And that's the thing about these people. They do work all the time. They never quit. They work all night. And their plans go forward because they're so constant in their work, and they have their goals. And the American people have no idea what their goals are or how they're doing it. They get a glimmering now and then, like opposition to the dissolution of the borders of Canada, Mexico, and the United States, but they don't understand what process is going on.
Well, now I'm going to open up this segment to callers. You have a rare opportunity to ask questions of one of the, or possibly the only, surviving individual who actually worked with the Pulitzer Pound. And again, Eustace Mullins is working on a new book, which of which Ezra Pound will be the subject. Now, you have already published throughout the years several major books on both alternative the health and also alternative economics. The title of one of the books that you published on alternative health is Murder by Injection, which, as you mentioned in one of our previous interviews, is the only book written on the history of the American Medical Association.
Yeah, that's why I went to the Library of Congress.
And also your...
And they had no book on the medical association.
Now, that is, you have that currently available, the Murder by Injection. Okay. Now, there's also the book I'm holding in my hand, which is The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which is absolutely the best history of the Federal Reserve and what led up to it that I've ever read. The information in it is quite accurate, and it's put forth in a very readable form. In other words, one does not have to have a degree in economics, as I do, to read the book. Any lay person can read this. Any person of ordinary intelligence can extract a wealth of information about how we've been pushed into debt slavery. There are also some, you have some, in addition to Murder by Injection and The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, you also have this difficult individual, Ezra Pound, which is a book which covers your association with the poet Ezra Pound.
It's the only authorized biography of Pound. He personally commissioned me to write this book. And he commissioned the Federal Reserve book because in his lifetime as a writer, Ezra Pound only commissioned two books from other writers. In other words, his biography and the Federal Reserve book.
Now, you also have some other books. What are the titles of the other books that you have available?
I have one, My Life in Christ, which I'm rewriting at the present time and out of print. And that is the story of my Christian life, and that's my most important book.
Well, now, in order to order your books, you said that the books, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve and Murder by Injection and also this difficult individual, Ezra Pound, you said those were all $40 each postpaid. The other books that you have, such as The Life in Christ, are those also the same price or are they different prices?
Oh, no, My Life in Christ is not as long a book. I originally published those for $1 a piece in 1968. And they sold out immediately.
Is that one out of print now?
Yes, it's out of print. I have to.
Oh, okay. So then they cannot order that until it's reprinted.
No, it has to be reprinted. See, I'm in a retirement home, which is the most restrictive area for a publisher to be because I'm cut off from the world.
Well, now, I have these books, which are in print and are available, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, Murder by Injection, This Difficult Individual, Ezra Pound. Eustace, I'll give, for our listeners, I'll give your mailing address. These are all $40 each, and that is postage paid, so that includes shipping. And the address for ordering the books is Eustace Mullins, Eustace Mullins, Mullins, 94 Mountain Vista Drive, apartment 101. That's 94 Mountain Vista, two words, Vista and then Drive, apartment 101. And the city is Stuart's Draft, that's Stuarts. And then another word, draft, D-R-A-F-T, Virginia, and the zip is 24477.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, now, we have, again, I'm going to open up this segment to callers who might have questions about the money system for Eustace. The number to call is 1-800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231. Looking at your book here, it's interesting how people are tuning in and listening to today the neocon artists like O'Reilly and so forth, and people of that ilk, how I believe our founding fathers would be turning over in their graves if they could hear the rot that's coming out in the mass media from these neocon artists. I contrast that with in at the very beginning portion of your book. This is what is written here. It says, the bill for establishing a national bank in 1791 undertakes, among other things, one, to form the subscribers into a corporation, two, to enable them in their corporate capacities to receive grants of lands, and so far is against the laws of Mort, Maine. I'll continue this after the break. We're back with Crash. Are you ready? We have a caller, Ron in Louisiana. Ron?
Yes, enjoying the program very much. It's very informative. I have a comment to make, and then I have a question also. One thing, he did mention the destruction of the white race. Of course.
Well, now, Eustace is on the line, so you can ask the question. But anyway, we have a situation where the goal of these international bankers is to form a one world debt slavery system, and that means that they want to enslave all of us.
Yeah,
if you go to my website, which is hearitonline.com, that's HEARITONLINE.com, there's a series of articles, one of which is Let Haiti Live. There's several things that you can click on about Haiti and what the international banking system has done to Haiti. Of course, the population.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, if you haven't seen those articles, it might be even worse than you might think. Because what they have done, and of course the ethnicity or the racial composition of Haiti is mostly black, they have absolutely raped that country. They've got the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Did they get there just by chance? Absolutely not. This was deliberately done, and it shows exactly what they did. And this was done by the international bankers to the Haitian people. So it isn't just one group that they're targeting. They're targeting all of us. All of us. And the ultimate goal is to make us all debt slaves in a one-world debt slavery system. In that sense, they don't discriminate. They want to make debt slaves of every one of us. So thank you for the call. And before we went into the break, we were reading from a portion of Eustace's book here, and it's incredible because I was contrasting this from the rot, the absolute garbage that we're getting from the neocon artists such as O'Reilly in the mass media today. Contrast this to what is at the beginning of Eustace's book. This is a very distinguished author that is quoted by Eustace about the constitutionality of the bank, the National Bank, February 15th, 1791. Okay? And this distinguished writer is giving his opinion about the bank. It says, the bill for establishing a national bank, which of course was the precursor to the Federal Reserve Bank, the bill for establishing a national bank in 1791 undertakes, among other things, one, to form the subscribers into a corporation, two, to enable them in their corporate capacities to receive grants of lands, and so far is against the laws of Mort, Maine. Three, to make alien subscribers capable of holding lands, and so far is against the laws of alienage. 4, to transmit these lands on the death of a proprietor to a certain line of successors, and so far changes the course of descents. 5, to put the lands out of the reach of forfeiture or escheat, and so far is against the laws of forfeiture and escheat. 6, to transmit personal chattels to successors in a certain line, and so far is against the laws of distribution. 7, to give them sole and exclusive right of banking under the national authority, and so far is against the laws of monopoly. 8, to communicate to them a power to make laws paramount to the laws of the states, for so they must be construed to protect the institution from the control of the state legislatures, and so probably they will be construed. I consider the foundation of the Constitution as laid on this ground, that all powers not get delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states or to the people. To take a single step beyond the boundaries thus specially drawn around the powers of Congress is to take possession of a boundless field of power no longer susceptible to any definition. The incorporation of a bank and the powers assumed by this bill have not, in my opinion, been delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Now, can any of our listeners tell me who said this? What economist said this? The number to call is 1-800-259-9231. 1-800-259-9231. Can any of our listeners help? Well,
hello?
The distinguished gentleman who said this, and the distinguished gentleman that Eustace quoted in the beginning of his book, is a gentleman by the name of Thomas Jefferson. Now, today, we're not listening to people like Thomas Jefferson. We're listening to the O'Reillys and people of that ilk who are, in my opinion, selling this country down the river. Eustace, would you care to comment on that?
Oh, yes. Thomas Jefferson was a Virginia farmer who knew more about banking than any person I've ever read in my life. And how this Virginia farmer got his information on banking, I have no idea. But he was a very brilliant man and a scholar, and he was also the richest man in Virginia. His father had left him 20,000 acres of prime Virginia land, which today is worth $1 million an acre. And so he died bankrupt, by the way, because the same bankers who he fought against, they finally won over him and left a bankrupt man, and his estate was sold in bankruptcy. So that tells you what happens to people who fight the international bankers.
All right. Now, again, once again, the address to order Eustace Mullins' books, they are each one of them. Each one is $40 with shipping included, postage paid, and the primary books that are available are The Secrets of the Federal Reserve, which is probably the best book on the history of the Federal Reserve that I've ever read. That's $40. Then also the only book on the history of the American Medical Association, the AMA, Murder by Injection, that's also $40. And then also the This Difficult Individual, Ezra Pound, is a book about Eustace's personal relationship with probably the most brilliant poet of the 20th century, Ezra Pound. So the address to order those books is Eustace Mullins, Eustace Mullins, 94 Mountain Vista Drive, Apartment 101, Stuart's Draft, that's S-T-U-A-R-T-S, Draft, D-R-A-F-T, Virginia, 24477. In the book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, you talk about how the money creators, and I'll just, this is on page 119, on July 25th, 1921, Senator Owen stated on the editorial page of the New York Times, quote, "The Federal Reserve Board is the most gigantic financial power in all the world. Instead of using this great power as the Federal Reserve Act intended that it should, the board delegated this power to the banks through the weight of its influence toward the support of the policy of German inflation." And can you comment about how the connection between the hyperinflation in Germany and the Federal Reserve Bank, Eustace?
Oh, yes. Inflation is simply printing too much money. And the central bank has the right of issue. That is, it can print all the money it wants. And the second task of central bank is war finance. So since the Federal Reserve Act was, the 1913 was enacted into law, this country has been almost continually at war. And President Bush says he has 97 countries more to attack. So you haven't heard the last of him yet.
All right. Thank you very much for being back with us, Eustace.